previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
I'm not really ready to commit to doing more than one episode a month.
I don't think I should have had that Chipotle chicken during the show.
I mean, what I'd really like to see is more diversity in the Star Wars cast.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
And together, we're the assholes who bought all those tickets for the Thursday, the December 17th showing for Star Wars, which is why you weren't able to log in to Fandango to buy yours.
It was mostly... So I needed to get tickets fast, so I bought access to a botnet so that I could buy them really fast. That apparently crashed Fandango.
Yeah, here's the real problem is that Eric wasn't actually even trying to buy tickets to Star Wars. He was mistakenly under the impression that he could use this botnet to buy all the tickets for 27 dresses.
Yeah. Is that
which hasn't been in theaters for like ages.
It didn't work.
I was like, well, yeah. it is like the 8th anniversary, so like clearly they are re-releasing it, right?
Maybe that's what he was thinking. I don't know, honestly. Wait. Did anyone here actually buy advance tickets to Star Wars?
I didn't try.
I think you did.
Shut up, Eric.
Yeah, so I was watching Monday Night Raw, and I saw Jonathan Strickland's tweet that says, if the WWE doesn't use this opportunity to turn Fandango into the top heel, they're wasting an opportunity. And I'm like watching Raw, and I'm like, Fandango's not even in this match. I don't even know what he's talking about. It's not until about 10 minutes later do I see Twitter blowing up that people are fucking furious. Because apparently Fandango is the only way you could have gotten these Star Wars tickets.
It wasn't the only way. It was one of several ways, all of which were broken. So what happened was, first of all, the tickets went on sale earlier than what had previously been anticipated. And once that news went out, thank you, The Verge, then suddenly everybody started flooding the various movie servers. Like movietickets.com got hit, Fandango got hit, the Fandango app got hit, the individual theaters were getting hit, like the Alamo Drafthouse was overwhelmed. All of these servers were overwhelmed by the rush of traffic going to them. And so you started getting these incredibly slow responses. Things were timing out. I tried buying tickets several times, got as far as the payment process, and even got so far as the point where it was going to give me my confirmation where it ended up pooping out. And I even got emails saying from PayPal, because I was using PayPal to pay for these things, saying that we'll send you a confirmation once the client has processed the payment on their side. And I was thinking, well, shoot, I don't know for certain that the payment went through, that the transaction is complete. And I kept trying and kept trying, and it was getting really frustrating. And I could already tell that the theaters that would be my top choices, those had already been picked clean, the ones where you can make your reserve seats and everything. All of those were – they were picked clean before I had even heard that the tickets were already on sale. So I ended up going to bed – because it just wasn't working. And then the next morning I woke up at like 6 a.m. and I was like, I guess I'll check and see. Cause I'm sure by now the rush is over. Everything's calmed down. And at that point I was able to buy tickets to a 9 p.m. showing on Thursday night. No problem. The only showing I couldn't get would have been the earlier one, the 7 o'clock. And all I wanted was a regular screening. I didn't want IMAX. I didn't want 3D. I just wanted a regular screening of the movie, and I figure if I really like it, then maybe on a subsequent viewing I'll do the 3D IMAX thing. But on the first viewing, I just want to see the film on a regular screen.
Was it shot? Do you know if it was shot using IMAX cameras, or was it shot natively in 3D or anything?
I believe there's one segment of the film that was shot on IMAX cameras, and I have never seen a movie in that way. Like, I've never seen any of the movies where they – one of the Batman ones did that.
Batman, yeah, there was just like –
yeah, Dark Knight Rises, about like – I want to say a third of the movie was shot in IMAX, if not more than that. It was a significant portion of it, and it to not watch it in IMAX was a disservice because there's no 3D nonsense.
I never saw it in IMAX.
I did. I got to see it in IMAX, and it was just it was phenomenal. Like just, it's funny because when they go from IMAX to regular cinema, you're like, this looks like shit. Oh, it looks great again. It looks like
well,
shit.
See, that's the problem is that's why I didn't want to see it. I would think I would find it too jarring with the transition back and forth between IMAX and regular.
Oddly enough, it made it feel when they would go to IMAX scenes, it made it feel like it was more serious. Like, so like it was when you'd go to the actual regular, like it's not film, but whatever they're using nowadays, it felt a bit like, okay, this is the part where we relax. And when we go to IMAX, stuff's going to turn up pretty heavy. So that happened a lot in Dark Knight Rises where like Catwoman would be doing something. You're like, okay, this is really important. So it kind of actually gave you like a cue when to just sit back and go, okay, this is not exactly going to be an intense scene. It could be awesome when it comes to actual acting because you have, you know, talking heads and people going back and forth. But when you're talking about giant scenes, when you saw that thing blow out, you're like, okay, it's happening.
Man, I'm so glad that we now have tools that movies can use to alert us when we should be paying attention to them. Boy, that's great. Yay.
I enjoy it. Captain Killjoy over there.
Well, I'm just saying, like, one of the things we do on this show is that we try to dedicate our attention to movies. Now, granted, these are movies that don't deserve it.
I'm not saying that Nolan was using that as a tool. I'm just saying, like, you noticed it after a little bit. Like, oh, it's going to get huge now. Like, there's, like, 1,000 people on screen at one time because the resolution isn't – I doubt regular people are thinking, like, the resolution of these cameras are amazing. And look at the actual aspect ratio change. That was me watching it because I do video. Yeah.
So you all heard it. Iaz dismisses the opinion of the regular person.
Yeah. So fuck you, regular person.
Iaz being an extraordinary human being who is capable of noticing such things as the resolution on a camera, whereas of course you commenters have no idea.
Yeah, I have these corrective lenses for a reason. So it corrects my eyes, and some people just they choose to, like, I don't know, like get a laser on their corneas and they think they know what they're doing. Other people, they just they don't use corrective lenses, but I have them. So I am correct when I view things with my lenses.
So when you take your glasses off, you're just automatically wrong?
It's like the Pope. It's the opposite of the Pope. So when I take them off, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm like, the world's flat.
When Iaz puts his glasses on, he is ineffable. Sure.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, when I have my glasses on, people accept the bullshit I feed them.
Exactly. So
glasses off, they're like, this guy, who the fuck is he?
And when you bite,
see,
when you bite,
I wouldn't trust like, anything you say right now.
It's when you want to sound sincere, you bite the tip of your arm. Audio sure. Listeners. There's not an arm in my hand, but for the lenses. Anyway,
he's talking about the arm of his glasses. He's not talking about just taking his arm and biting it.
I can do that now too, just for the literal. Now we're done with that. So you got your tickets.
And this
here.
Is why you should watch the video on GFQ Network.
GFQnetwork.com if you want to see the lunacy that's happening here. So wait a second. So Jonathan, you have tickets.
Yes.
Eric, did you bother to get tickets?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, neither did I.
I'm also not super worried about spoilers. Like, Jonathan is very against spoilers.
Well, yes, because this is a film. I mean, I was like these were the movies I watched when I was like legitimately when I was growing up. I mean, these were the movies that were coming out when I was a kid, right? I'm older than both of you, so to me, there's a lot.
Oh, hold that over my head again.
I mean, I was alive when the fucking movies came out, Eric. Like, when the movies came out in the theater, I was alive then, and I went to see them.
Listen, that's great.
Well, I'm just saying that I've got this very nostalgic connection.
I really
to them.
Liked your priority argument for the ticket sales. It would have been so hard to prove, though. Like,
yeah,
what
Eric is referring to is Yeah, I turned to my wife and I said, God damn it. They should give priority to anyone who was alive when A New Hope came out. They should get first dibs at these damn tickets.
I think at senior citizen villages. You're just living in the wrong place.
Yeah, no, I, I get the fucking AARP cards. I should be able to cash in somewhere, right? Yeah. I was definitely turning into the grouchy, the grouchy old man that is inside of me all the time ran rampant on Monday night as I tried to get these tickets. You know, I wasn't the only one who was disappointed. I remember seeing Tom Merritt tweeted about how the experience of trying to get tickets was the first negative thing associated with the new Star Wars trilogy. So it was not like I was, you know, alone in my feeling in this. It was just that I just wanted it. Originally, I wasn't even going to get advanced tickets. I was just going to be like, no, you know what? I'll just see it when I see it. But it was only because I saw that on Thursday night, when technically the day before it actually comes out, you know, it used to be that the only screenings you would ever get to see on those would be midnight screenings. And I already knew I wasn't going to do a midnight screening because I often have to shoot video on Friday. I need to be rested. Sometimes I'm writing a script for what I'm going to be shooting that day. So I didn't want to put myself through that where I'd be working on a sleep deficit and still having to try and do my job. I take great pride in what I do and I don't want to half-ass it. So I was pretty much sure. I was like, well, I'll just catch it opening weekend. But then I saw that the screenings were well before midnight. And I thought, well, this I can do. I could go see a movie at 7 or 9 p.m., get home, get a good night's rest, and still be able to do my job to my satisfaction the next day. So that's when I decided to jump in. But of course, by that time, all the servers were already being overwhelmed. So, I mean, all turned out fine. And I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, this is kind of a big deal for me. I was pretty sure when I saw the prequels that my love of Star Wars was killed, or at least severely diminished, because the prequels were just so disappointing to me. And I know some people love them, and that's fine. But to me,
Whoa.
What?
You know some people love them?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Can you explain that at all? Because I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that without being facetious.
Some people do love them, and they're mostly kids.
Yeah, no, I was going to say I know lots of my friends who have kids who, that was their introduction and stuff. Yeah, I love them. Yeah,
the kids love them, and I think the kids are wrong, honestly.
The kids are wrong. I mean,
my opinion is that the kids are wrong.
You know, these kids, I got to show them C-SPAN because apparently they fucking love that stuff. As long as there's a pod racing scene in the middle of C-SPAN. Now, look, episode one, I think, is just atrocious. I don't think any kid likes episode one. Two and three are all right.
See, I go the other way.
Only thing.
I think episode one is the best of the prequels. In that it's the least bad to me. And here's why. Here's why it's the least bad. Jake Lloyd, notwithstanding, he is god-awful. Jar Jar Binks, god-awful.
Yeah.
But there were moments in that movie where I felt like it was kind of Star Wars-y. The second one, Attack of the Clones, the love story was just... love story was even more painful than Jake Lloyd. Okay, so I hated the love story. Because here's what the love story is. I'll boil down the love story into the most
that should
basic...
Be on this, I'm sorry, that should be on the movie poster and DVD box from now on. The love story... On episode one, it's Jake Lloyd is better than the love story in episode two.
Yeah.
It's true. You're right. Sorry.
Boiling down the love story in episode two, here's how it goes. It goes, I love you. We can't do this. I love you. This isn't going to work. I love you. Seriously, we have responsibilities that we have to see through. I love you. All right, fine. Like it's love. It's courtship through attrition. Anakin just breaks down Padme until she says, okay. It's awful. It's the worst handled, ham-fisted, terrible love story. So I hated that one. And part three I hated even more because there was so much stuff that was just fan service. The Yoda flipping all over the place shit was unnecessary. There was also the complete emasculation of one of the greatest villains in cinematic history. You know, seeing the what should have been an awe-inspiring moment of Darth Vader's rise, the fact that we now have the transformation of Anakin into Darth Vader, became the biggest punchline for the entire series. And I sat there and thought, like, how could you fuck this up? You had a character who, because you used him so sparingly in A New Hope, was terrifying and badass and amazing and intimidating and imposing. And you completely stripped him of all of those qualities in episode 3. And that, to me, is the biggest sin of the prequels, is taking this villain who should have been – it should have been a tragic character who is really terrifying by the end of the third episode. Like, we need to see why everyone is scared shitless of him in the beginning of A New Hope. But instead we get, no, it's awful. And that's why – I don't convince me on those arguments. Yeah. I don't think episode one's a good movie. I think episode one is awful, but I think it's the least bad of the three. But I could easily flip flop on that too, because Jake Lloyd is Anakin, young Anakin. It's such a bad decision in the first place.
Yippee.
Honestly. Yes. Yippee. And now this is pod racing. Fuck you. Okay. And I'm not blaming Jake Lloyd here. I know that guy, his life is shit, right? His life is shit.
He peaked at 5, so like he's fucked.
Well, he's had psychological issues, and I feel awful for the guy because it wasn't really his fault. The fault lies with George Lucas. That's where the fault lies. And he was not a good actor, but then George Lucas is a shitty director. And you know, I just got the feeling that whenever Lucas gave direction, I mean, you look at some of the actors there who are legitimately good actors, and yet they're turning in terrible performances. And you look at something else that they've done, and you're like, how can, like, this other thing they did is Oscar worthy.
Right.
And then you look at what they did in Star Wars.
Not a shitty actress. However,
Ewan McGregor is not a shitty actor. Liam Neeson is not a shitty actor.
Right.
Brian Blessed is not a shitty actor, but god damn it, he was awful as Boss Nass.
Right, exactly.
So this is the thing, is that, you know, you have to start drawing a conclusion. Well, where does the fault lie? If we see these actors do good work elsewhere, then presumably the fault is with the director and the editor. So, and the writer, which, you know, we're going to go with Lucas with at least two of those. So it's a real... I mean, episode one is terrible. And if you tried to make a real argument saying, no, here's why episode two is better than episode one or whatever,
right,
I might be forced to agree with you. I just know from my own – like the other way I can point at it is that I've seen episode one, I think, 3 times. I've seen episode two twice. I only ever watched episode three once. And if you had told 10-year-old me, hey, one day there's going to be a movie – where you get to see how Anakin Skywalker turns into Darth Vader, and you're going to hate it so much you'll only see it once, I would have thought you were on crack, which didn't even exist when I was 10.
But, well, I'm not going to – I don't feel like baiting this argument anymore.
I don't want to bait it, but this is like a parallel. It's because I'm thinking about, again, when I saw Jonathan's tweet, I was watching WWE Raw. And I keep watching professional wrestling, even though it consistently is abysmal and horrible, and I don't understand the decision-making behind it. And I'm seeing the parallels here. It's like, okay, somebody's in charge, Lucas or McMahon. They're taking characters you really love, and you're like, these guys could be awesome if they just knew what they were doing. And then they fuck them up beyond repair, and you're like hoping one day somebody else takes the helm, in this case, J.J. Abrams or Triple H for NXT. You're hoping that one day somebody actually gets their shit together, but you keep watching this crap. And if anything, the Star Wars stuff probably has, with all its fan fictions or its canon novelizations and comic books.
Expanded universe, yeah.
Thank you. And its cartoons has a lot of decent pillars built up because, yeah, the prequels, yeah, they have a bit of controversy to them. They're not so good compared to the original, but there's a lot of things that are good compared to the prequels, and they're actually part of the whole canon thing. So it just reminds me of wrestling, where it's like, yeah, I'm hoping this won't suck, but I'll probably watch it. But I'm not exactly like – I'm not freaking out. I don't have tickets. I'm not planning to get advance tickets. And if I see it, I see it. Whatever.
Abrams' approach appears to be more in line with certain things – that a lot of Star Wars fans hold very important in their hearts, like the move to include more practical effects as opposed to CGI.
Yes, that's the thing I got excited about. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
Practicals, absolutely amazing. Yeah.
When they did the Star Wars celebration, and they came out and like they were giving huge amounts of applause to J.J. Abrams, and they were giving huge amounts of applause to the cast and everything. But when Abrams specifically said that he really wanted to include more practical effects, it got the loudest ovation that had been performed at that point in the presentation. And it tells you how many people feel that that's really an important part of Star Wars is this. It needs to feel like a lived-in universe. It needs to feel like there has actually been conflict going on and that actual people built these ships that they weren't just, you know, like – Go ahead, Eric.
It just makes it last longer as a whole. I mean, the reason the first trilogy lasted as long as it did is because, when you film a real object existing, it doesn't look weird. But CGI,
CGI gets better and you can recognize earlier CGI work because it does not look as good as the current version, it breaks that ability to suspend your disbelief. Right. Like there are certain movies I genuinely love. I love the movie The Last Starfighter. It's a cheesy science fiction film, but it's a lot of fun. But the CGI in that is early CGI. Like the ships rendered in that are very early CGI attempts and they do not look great. It kind of holds up because it's sort of charming in the context of the movie in general. Also, in the movie, the main character trains to be a starfighter unknowingly by playing an arcade game. And so the ships look like the ships in the arcade game. So there's something to that as well. It kind of you give it a bit of a pass because it kind of fits within the mythology of the movie. But it's child's play compared to
a younger person watching that, though, would not understand that discrepancy.
Yeah.
And that's why the practical is important.
Sorry to cut you off, Eric. But, like, you know, you've seen things like stop-motion animation. We've seen things like King Kong, where it's like a claymation – not claymation. It's a stop-motion animation model. Or Jason and the Argonauts, you have this whole fight with skeletons. And we watch that now as adults and we're like, hey, that was revolutionary at the time and it was amazing. Even though now we know how it was done, it was a stop motion thing. Here's a little model moving along and they're doing this exposure thing so that you can actually have this actor fighting a model that's no larger than 4 inches. But we respect that. Is there a reason why you guys think that when it comes to CGI in the recent past, we're like, well, that just looks like shit. You shouldn't do that. You should be doing practical because at the time, like Jurassic Park, by the way, I think that thing holds up really well. I think the Star Wars stuff doesn't hold up as well because some of the things look a little bit out of place. But that's the nature of CGI at times. You can,
which is odd,
as we learn. Go ahead.
Jurassic Park did it was ILM 2, right?
Yes.
Well, to be fair, a lot of Jurassic Park, a lot of those scenes take
place. But there was less CGI with realistic backgrounds, I think.
Yeah, there were only a few scenes in Jurassic Park where they're really well lit too, which helps hide a lot of problems with CGI. Sure. There was the Apatosaurus scene that was well lit because that's when they're outside all the brontosaurus like dinosaurs that are eating stuff and then sneeze on them. But most of the scenes were in like shade or inside
the lights kitchen
off.
Scene with the velociraptors and things like
By the way, have you guys ever listened to the band The Double Clicks?
No.
I listened to them after you mentioned them last time.
I bought all their stuff after I heard them. They have a great song about velociraptors and it's specifically about dispelling the image of velociraptors that was created through Jurassic Park. And they explained that velociraptors were actually the size of turkeys. And it's a great song. I mean, it's very charming. All their stuff is great. So But anyway, getting back to your question, Ayaz, I think at least the Harryhausen stuff, like the Sinbad stuff, I think part of that still holds up because it still was a physical thing that had presence. And that seems to count for something. CGI, where it's just a digital representation of something that wasn't really there, is a little different, right? It doesn't, it's like, if it's done also, poorly, you can tell there was nothing there.
And it's also possible that it's easier for us to read. That's not true with the miniatures, I guess, but, you know, CGI done poorly, we can kind of subconsciously see that actors are talking to no one or interacting with no one, you know, like there's something
that's
there.
That's probably another reason why the performances in the prequels were so difficult, is because half the time they were acting against nothing at all. And, I mean, I'm sure really gifted actors don't blink an eye at that they can do that no problem. But, you know, in every acting experience I've had, if I've worked with someone who is not really into it, like they're not there. I mean, if you're in a show for a long time, sometimes that happens. Like you'll be at a performance and someone's just having an off night. It makes it harder to do your job as an actor.
'Cause you're feeding off them anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got two, like as a stage actor, you've got two things you're feeding off of: your fellow actors and the audience. And if your fellow actor isn't doing what he or she is supposed to do, then you have to work that much harder to get the scene to work. And I can't imagine what it's like when you are, you know, you're in front, your audience is a group of professionals who can't make any response, because if they did, they'd ruin the take. So your audience is being silent. You know, the people who are your true audience aren't going to see it until months after you've shot this scene. Mm-hmm. And then your fellow actor doesn't exist because they're a piece of green felt. It's
right.
That's a problem. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like I can even accept stuff like Muppet movies where everyone knows these are puppets. Well, I mean, they're puppets. Ultimately, there's someone.
Like it seems even easier to interact with the puppet for that, I guess, you know, like,
yeah. And as an audience member, I buy into it, right? Like I know there's a puppeteer with his or her arm up in the air with a figure around it, manipulating this thing, possibly performing multiple characters in the same movie, which means they're just doing different voices and slightly different personalities for each one. But if the puppeteer is skilled and the script is well done, I don't think about that. I buy into this. These are characters.
Right. Your subconscious and your conscious doesn't register it as, this is fucking weird. Why is he acting like that? You're just, you know why he's acting like that. Like if it's slightly off in the performance or something like that, you're like, well, it's a puppet. So they're dealing with that as an actor while they're doing it.
This is really telling, because if you ever watch any of the outtakes from the Muppet Show, when they have the guest star on stage along with the Muppets, and something goes wrong, the guest star doesn't suddenly start talking to the puppeteer. The guest star is still engaging with the puppet. The puppet is the thing. Yeah. That's a connection as an actor that you can have with something that's not really there, quote unquote. I mean, the puppeteer is there, but there's inside that puppet, there is no soul. Physical. There's nothing there.
Right.
But it's very different than acting against CGI.
Right.
So,
right. There's your titles. By the way, inside that puppet, there is no soul.
There you go. My sister, the head puppeteer for the Center for Puppetry Arts, will love that one.
Speaking about puppets, really quick. I was sending gifts back and forth with Liz the other day. And one of the ones I wanted to send was a loved one, and it was Piggy and Miss Kermit.
Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Right. And then I was like, oh, wait. No.
you accidentally broke up with Liz. Nice going, dipshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Oh no,
man, I'm really looking forward. So here in Atlanta, we have the Center for Puppetry Arts. When it opened, Jim Henson was part of the opening. He performed some stuff, did some talks, and many of his puppets had been on display in their museum, but they were mostly puppets from the movies. They weren't the Muppets for the most part. I think they had a couple of old Muppets in the museum, but they were mostly supporting characters like Ling Hogthrob from Pigs in Space, that kind of stuff.
The throwaway Muppets.
Well, I mean, just not your main tier, you know, not Kermit or your Gonzo or your Ms. Piggy or any of those. But he also had like some of the really impressive puppets from other films, like The Dark Crystal. They had a full size Skeksis on display, and that thing is imposing when you see it in person. It's terrifying. Like this is the stuff of nightmares, and it's really amazing to look at. Well, they've been building a new wing of the center, and it's almost ready to open. And in fact, it opens next month, and we get to go to a preview opening event early next month to check it out. And they're going to have apparently a whole section where it's laid out like a historical walk through Jim Henson's life. And you start in a room that is a reproduction of Jim Henson's office. And then you walk through and you get to see the different styles of puppets he worked with throughout his life. And I cannot wait.
That sounds amazing. The museum here that I've been really interested to go to is the in San Francisco, the Disney Walt Disney Family House.
Yeah.
I have not been. Have you been there?
No, I took a so I've gone on the Disney cruise several times. Right, I've done the Disney cruise. One of the cruises they did, they had a ship on the West Coast, and they did a series of cruises called the Pixar cruises, and they stopped in San Diego and San Francisco and L.A. And it was a lot of fun. And one of the things that you could do is go visit the Disney Family Museum. And we wanted to do it, but we actually ended up getting tickets for the cruise pretty late because it just happened to go on sale. And so Becca and I jumped on it. But by that time, the excursions had all been booked. So there wasn't any room left on that excursion. So we missed out. But I didn't even know it existed until I did that cruise.
I didn't know it existed until I got here. Mm-hmm. And then I think I saw signs from it driving up from L.A. I'm excited about that one. I'm interested to see. It seems like an interesting museum. Or is it in L.A.? I'm confused.
It's all California. You know, it's a tiny state.
It's tiny. You know how many times that happens, though? I'm still amused by...
It's because, like, you just moved there. I had the same idea. When I moved there, I'm like, oh, everything's just nearby. It's like, no. Like, San Diego's
San Diego's quite a ways away.
Like, I realized that very quickly, but it's still like, you know, your friends and family are still like, oh, I know a guy who lives in L.A. And I'm like, well, that's like me saying to you from New York that I know a guy who lives in South Carolina.
That's the same thing. It's exactly the same.
We live on the coast. We did a trip. My wife and I did a trip where we started in San Francisco, spent a couple days there, and then we took the coastal highway down, and we went all the way down to L.A., went to Disneyland. Then after that, after a couple days in L.A., we continued down all the way to San Diego, and that took... That was a trip where we took a week to do that, so we weren't rushed or anything, and that was great. But yeah, it's a huge amount of distance.
Yeah, we did we did Coastal Highway from around L.A. up to San Francisco. I mean, it's a beautiful drive, but yeah, it's definitely very far. Yeah.
Did you stop in Big Sur or anything like that?
We didn't stop in Big Sur because my drive up Coastal Highway around Big Sur, I was following somebody going very, very slow. Very slow. And like you get to the parts where it's one lane up around Big Sur, and it took me just hours to get through Big Sur.
So you kind of stopped in Big Sur. Yeah,
there were probably many stops in Big Sur.
Let me ask you this then. So have you seen the Musée Mécanique in San Francisco yet?
I have not.
Eric, you have got to go to Musée Mécanique.
All right. In San Francisco. I will do that.
I
have a list of things that people tell me to do in San Francisco, and I've hit most of the top bars so far.
Well, Musée Mécanique is a penny arcade museum.
Oh God.
So oh, make sure you bring there. Lots. Yeah, right? It's freaky.
I brought Liz right. there. They had this awesome like this strength one, this strength machine. So these are like a lot of mechanical based arcade machines. So it's not just like they have some video game stuff. You want to play like NBA Jam or you want to play like a Street Fighter 2. They actually will have like those arcade cabinets there, but they have the older style physical machinery arcade games. So you have some things that are like seeing film or whatever, but there's this one test of strength one that I'm just like, I got to do this because, you know, I just wanted to do it. So you put in like a dollar or whatever, like whatever it is. You got to pull together these two giant, like, I guess, bars that are, you see all these gears inside this clear machine. It's an amazing machine. And so I'm pulling this thing. And then I realized as I'm pulling this, the whole machine is moving towards me because it's not that heavy. It's got a lot of force. It's stopping me from putting it together. But the fact is it doesn't weigh that much. So as I'm pulling this thing, I'm realizing I'm moving this thing about 3 feet forward. Finally close the thing and I'm like, yay, and put it down. And then I'm like, okay, I guess that was easy. Then some other guy after us, this dude in this like leather jacket, it looked like some kind of like 50s like relic, showed up. Not an older person. He just looked like somebody who had time traveled over. He tried it. And he was just like, and I'm like, cool. I am stronger than that guy. So that's my story.
This looks like it's full of really awesome stuff. Oh, it's on Pier 45? All right,
yeah.
Cool.
When we went
in a couple weeks. Yeah.
When we went, we just started walking around and trying any, like, we'd put coins in anything that we thought looked remotely interesting. And I remember Becca and I walked past one that was supposed to be like a bunch of cowboys sitting around a fire, and it said, it had a little warning sign on the panel in front of it where you'd put a coin in. And said, warning, offensive material. And I look at Becca and she's like, oh, you know, we have to do this. I think it was like the Wind of the West or something. And if we put a coin in, all it was a series of fart noises. And occasionally one of the little cowboy figures would wiggle a little bit.
All right. So Liz found the video where I'm doing this. It's a Vine or an Instagram. So I'm going to do a very low tech thing where I'm going to show this video over.
Yeah,
this is back when I had a buzz cut. In 2013, here you go. Here's footage of me. Let's see, get over there. This camera, sorry, my mistake. I forgot I had this. Here we go. That's where it starts. And I am trying desperately to move this thing. And there, I don't know if you saw at the very end. Actually, I do move this thing a couple of feet. That's me doing that 2 years ago, back in the day. This is June 9th, 2013.
You should watch the video on gfqnetwork.com.
Yeah, if you're listening, you want a description of that? Even the waveform will not show you that. So really try to watch the show.
Yeah, I liked it because, you know, it also, I mean, getting back to the puppetry thing, there are a lot of little mechanical figures. You know, you put a coin in and it's like a little amusement where like a little mechanical band plays something or some mechanical dancers move around. There's one that's like a house of murder and you put a coin in and there's all these little nefarious actions that happen throughout the house, that kind of stuff. And it reminds me a lot of puppetry. So there's something kind of, especially if you can go in a time where it's not busy, it gets pretty creepy, right? Like you're just around all these kind of lifeless figures and then someone puts a coin in and they spring to life. It definitely has that sort of element of spooky, creepy horror movie in parts of it. So that also really appealed to both of us. So
I'll go and take some or have Liz take some vines of me trying to move that machine.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think it works out more than I do. So
I love the idea that if for some reason I thought that Vine no longer exists. I'm like, yeah, it was a Vine. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, it's still around.
It's kind of how we're gonna talk. I'm sure next year Snapchat? We'll be saying the same thing about Periscope.
Should we just start a PWP Snapchat for everyone?
Do we need content that disappears from this show?
We already have episodes that have disappeared from our archives, so
that would be great. So we actually have those episodes happen in the Snapchat. We're just like, yeah. We've got 15 seconds, go. It's like, yes, you had a burrito and you thought of something else. I don't remember what we had in the previous episode.
I tell you, the next thing I want to see, the next kind of museum along these lines, because, you know, we talked about the Puppetry Museum and the Musée Mécanique. I really wanted to go to one of the pinball museums. I've never been to any of them, and I love pinball.
Yeah.
So
they're all in weird places. None of them are in major cities.
Well, there's Las Vegas. Las Vegas has one.
I don't want to. I hate Las Vegas.
You're
nearby now. It's very easy for you to just take a jaunt over. And I mean a jaunt. It's nothing.
So I will be going to CES again next year.
Yay! I won't see you at all.
Going to IS? Really?
Yes. I will be going to CES.
You'll be super busy again.
Well, no, actually, I'll be different busy. I'll be on the stage. So come by.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, you should invite me on.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, come by and
you should invite me on.
You might book me on something.
You might see my face on the booth.
That's awesome. And
so if they put my face on the booth and I'm not there, something has gone horribly wrong. Or if you see a giant post-it, I fucked up.
I can see your face on a booth.
You should invite me on.
We can hijack the 404 again.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
We'll hate it.
Yeah, invite us on to hijack the 404. I can't hear you.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Sorry. I'm saying if we hijack that show, if we hijack that show, it'd be really weird because I'm not on that show anymore. And because it means actually aggressive. I'm just like, hey, how's it going? And then just kick somebody off their chair. That would be very unprofessional. And that would lead to the giant post-it on the board.
That's fair. I don't want to actually contribute to you losing your position or anything like that.
Just bring a big post-it. As long as you bring a big post-it, I think CNET will be fine with it.
Well, maybe I'll pull you onto one of my shows if you have if you have some time.
None of the stuff I'm saying represents CBS Interactive or CNET right now. I am just talking out of my ass.
Yeah. But maybe I'll pull you on to because I'm going to be there shooting. So we just launched something for How Stuff Works. How Stuff Works Now. It officially launched this week, I think. And it's been live for a while, but we're now actively pushing it. So it's at now.howstuffworks.com. And I really like the design. It's pretty. And I'm shooting videos for it. We did one today about hoverboards for Back to the Future Day. That was the video where I pitched it, wrote it, had it edited, shot it. The editor fixed that, published it all in a day, which was a big deal for us because that's not the way traditionally How Stuff Works does video production. We tend to do longer lead times, longer editing, longer publishing schedules. So this was, you know, kind of a testing grounds for us to see if we could really do the timely turn it around quickly while still doing it at a high quality. And I'm amazed at how beautiful that video came out. It looks great. And it was just super fast production turnaround. And anyway, we're going to be doing some of those while we're at CES. Don't know what the topics are yet because it's still pretty far out. But maybe I'll see if you've got any time for it. Maybe I'll see if I can pull you onto one.
Yes,
that'd be fun.
I have my notes from Evernote for last year. I was going through all my notes for some reason the other day, and it said like things like I had a CES note that said, "Don't book a non-stop flight. Make sure that you go directly home." Because last year I got stuck in Chicago. It said to bring some extra clothes, and it also said if you want to see your friends at CES, book them on Saturday. Or the first day of the event, because you're not going to see them during the week. Because I remember when we were there last year, it was this year. Like I got to see him like 8 minutes. It's Jonathan, and like we talk more during the course of this show, which we do like what once every 3 years, So yeah. I should talk more during this program.
It sounds about right.
And actually being there. Yeah. So anyway, so Eric, for some reason, if you want to visit, you know, I'm sure the hotel rates will be cheap during CES time.
Oh yeah.
Well, especially if you're staying, if you stay off the strip, it'll be fine.
That's true.
That's true. And I don't need to be on the strip if I don't have to be there every day. So
yeah, I don't know where we're staying yet. We haven't booked our hotels as far as I know. So I'm not sure like what all the details will be yet. But I'm glad I'm actually going with a crew this time. So that's nice. You know, it's always nice to have more direction. Before, it was one of those things where it's a one-man show, and that was always intimidating and exhausting because you spend most of your time wondering if what you are doing is the best use of your time. So you're constantly questioning yourself. It's kind of like going to a restaurant where the menu is 30 pages long, and you're like, well, I guess I'll have this, but I don't know because there's so many pages of other things.
if you watch enough television, reality television, you know that a 30-page menu means that the restaurateur has no fucking idea what they're doing. So you're probably making the right decision.
Well, I'm thinking specifically about the Cheesecake Factory. You know,
it's all crappy.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm not arguing.
How often are you at the Cheesecake Factory? By the way, the Cheesecake Factory is amazing, not a sponsor.
Right. That's our second.
Yet?
Last week we tried to get Comcast as our sponsor, and they haven't responded. So fuck you, Comcast. Fuck you, Comcast.
It's weird because we said fuck you, Comcast, before, and they didn't respond. So we're just continuing the fuck yous.
Right. So now is our official drive to get the Cheesecake Factory to sponsor podcasts without pretense.
All of our followers tweet at the Cheesecake Factory. We might be the only podcast possibly sponsored by the Cheesecake Factory, and that would be amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had mentioned in a previous episode last week, I think, that I wanted to start pulling quotes from earlier episodes and quizzing Eric and Iaz on who said it and in what context. I don't have that ready yet. But one thing I did laugh out loud about when I was listening to old episodes was when we had made the decision that we were going to do everything we could to be named one of the best podcasts of 2014.
Oh, God.
Which we did. We did successfully do that.
I think we need to keep that as our motto and not update the year. So our motto this year is still to be named one of the best podcasts of 2014.
We had a good year. It was a good year.
I think we did 8 episodes that year.
I was about to say 13, but you might be right. You missed a couple of them. So
right. That's true. So we've got that. So we're trying again to get the Cheesecake Factory, which I'm assuming is at the Cheesecake Factory on Twitter.
I hope so.
If it's not, we're really sorry, at the Cheesecake Factory, whoever you are. But
unless you
want
to sponsor us, in which case that's fine too. We don't care where the money comes from.
And sponsorship could be money. It could be in like the AA fashion where we can just call you at random hours. We don't really care how the sponsorship works.
Yeah, I was about to say, it could just be cheesecake.
I just want page 27 of the menu. Just send
me those. We already know that Iaz will work for pie.
Hey.
True.
Wait. Good pie.
It's not time to say good pie yet.
Don't insult our sponsor.
Because a cheesecake is kind of a pie, and yes, very good pun, Mr. Strickland.
Thank you.
We have not talked at all about Back to the Future Day, considering we are shooting this on Back to the Future Day. Does anybody care about this fucking thing? Because I'm just kind of over it.
I care about it only in the sense that, again, those were movies that I really enjoyed when I was growing up. I enjoyed the first one, and I liked the third one, and I thought the second one was a total mess. So while I appreciate the nostalgia for Back to the Future Part 2 Day, Back to the Future Part 2 itself, I think, is a pretty lousy movie. I think it really only exists to serve as a link between the first movie and the third movie, because it is a convoluted mess. It's almost like two very short movies crammed together to try and make a full story, and neither of them are very good. The performances are great, and the technology is imaginative, but the actual story is a mess. And part 3 I like because I like Westerns, but it's not... I recognize it's not as good a movie as the first one.
Now, Eric, as a resident Marty McFly lookalike, what is your opinion?
Really? That's
of the three of us, I think you win. That's really not that.
The sweater?
I don't.
It's the hair mostly.
It's definitely. Well, I'm brown, so I fucking lose right there. So
that's true. So that's it. Not brown has hair.
It's not a great resemblance.
No, I asked that. That's another contender for title. Not brown has hair.
I'm gonna have to put that down. Sorry.
See, now that's the kind of quote. That's the kind of quote I would pull in a future episode. By the way, I will just go ahead and say this. Eric probably he talks the least of the three of us. I clearly talk the most. But when Eric talks, he throws fucking bombs.
That's good to hear every now and then. All right. Marty McFly Day. Let's see. I got nothing. I realized it this morning and pretty much it was the scrolling through Twitter thing. And then I was like, oh, all right. Although there was a very good parody article that I saw about Michael J. Fox getting arrested for sports betting.
Oh, nice.
That was pretty good. Yeah.
I took the opportunity to share a lot of stuff on the Tech Stuff Facebook page that relates back to Back to the Future because I wrote how the DeLorean works. So I shared that. Because it was actually really fascinating to look at the history of the DeLorean and how totally fucked up that was.
Because it runs on cocaine.
Pretty much.
I think it was DeLorean.
Yeah, no, John DeLorean definitely did.
He ran.
Allegedly.
Sorry. don't sue us, John DeLorean, or sponsor us. You have two options.
So I shared that one. I shared one about hoverboards. I took the opportunity because I was like, well, this is fun. It's a fun day. People are enjoying themselves. And I legitimately like the content that we had that tied into it. And it's not like I wrote the content for it, but I just like, I think people, if they're interested in this, this is a good day to share it. And, not like I tried not to do it so frequently that I was forcing it down anyone's throats or anything, but, I enjoyed it. And, like I said, I still think the first movie is fantastic. It's one of the more entertaining sci-fi comedies out there, and I could still watch it today and still be thoroughly entertained. So,
yeah, not that, so much the movie, second one. For no reason whatsoever, assuming you're watching this, I'm just promoting Amazon Prime. If you got Amazon Prime right now, Back to the Future trilogy is streaming for the rest of the month, and then it'll go away. So if you're like, I don't want to buy it, you don't have to. It's right now. And Amazon is not a sponsor. And if you're not a sponsor, Amazon will say, fuck you. No. That's horrible. I like Amazon. Yeah. So, no.
Yeah. So if Amazon, if you want to sponsor us, okay.
Yeah. Does anybody have negative feelings towards Amazon? Anybody here?
No. I'm an Amazon Prime member.
It's possible that's the only possible sponsor we've brought up that we don't have negative feelings.
They show up, it's a smiley face on the box. You forget you ordered shit, and you're like, cool, presents. Like,
the only negative thing I have to say about Amazon, it's not even huge. It's just one of those things that I'm sure it's something that's going to get solved over time, is that it's clear they have several different standard size boxes. And the problem is if the thing you ordered is slightly larger than the box that it would be a best fit for, then you get a abnormally huge box along with your order.
Full of pillows.
Yes.
You know what? I can't say anything against that. I have a cat. Cat loves the pillows.
Well, I get like one of the things I order are these dog chews for my puppy. And they're very long. So the box I get, you could easily fit three or four packs of these things side by side. But I tend to only order one at a time because it takes them a long time to get through them. And I'd rather not have a whole bunch on hand. And, you know, because Amazon delivers in like 2 days, I don't have a sense of urgency about it. But then when I do it, I get a box that's four times larger than what I need, four times wider than what I need. And then it just means I'm breaking down boxes for recycling a lot. And honestly, if maybe in the future we'll see a greater variation in the boxes, so that there's less wasted space.
If they sponsor us, we can give them plenty of feedback on boxes.
Until they do, so fuck you, Amazon, for your large boxes. you make us break down boxes, but for people who like to be shut-ins, I really can't. Other than their actual, this is real. Amazon is no longer going to stock the Apple TV or the Chromecast starting, I think it's like late October, because it's difficult to get Amazon content on there, which makes me think with a new Apple TV, they're not putting an Amazon app on there. So what the hell? That's the only negative feeling I have towards them. And also buying Big Hero 6 toys, what the fuck? Why does Callahan cost $35? I know it's supply and demand. It's not really your fault, but I'm blaming you for economy. For economics, sorry. It's just your fault that economics exists.
You saw my Dragon Con costume, right?
Yeah, you were. What was the actual? What was the generic name for the?
Yokai was the name, but everyone called him Kabuki Mask.
Right, Yokai, because that's a Japanese spirit demon or something close to that, right? Do you know exactly what?
I didn't do enough research to go. Yeah, but everything I've seen, it's always been like that sort of monstrous Kabuki Mask style character, but the. He was called Yokai in sort of the mythology of it, but in the movie everyone refers to him as Kabuki Mask until the unmasking.
Right. Which we just called Callahan. And that's fun thing is my son wanted to buy him, so I said, sure, I'll buy him for you. And it's a little 4-inch toy. And the other 4-inch toys cost about $10, and that sounds reasonable. But since Yokai is so difficult to get, he costs like $30. So I know what he's going to do with them. He's going to take them and smash them together because he's only 5. And so for some reason, I was looking at my Amazon list. Yokai now costs $50 to buy. So he is now one of the most expensive toys you can buy. And I'm pretty sure this is going to increase over time because nobody was buying him, or to keep them together and keep them in good condition, people weren't doing that. So I'm pretty sure at some point when I'm like, I don't know, 45, I will realize my son probably took about an $800 toy and just smashed it to death with another toy. And once he ever gets honey lemon out of his we also have honey lemon that's just waiting. He doesn't know this. Mm-hmm. When he earns it, he gets honey lemon. Honey lemon is the second most difficult one to buy. He will be smashing these toys together, and not in any weird way. Just because he's a kid, he just smashes toys together.
Yeah, that's how he plays.
That's what he does. And so he's probably smashing thousands of dollars together, and it's okay. I think. So good for him. And Amazon, get more toys. So fuck you, Amazon.
There's something else I was going to bring
Dear
up
Amazon,
about.
Get us money. By the way, more box sizing.
I can't say negative things. Also,
I was going to bring up something else about Yokai, but I honestly it's totally slipped my mind now. So
that's perfect, because we should look to the future of Podcast Without Pretense next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Guys, I just remembered what it was about Yokai. It's
I don't know what the hell I just did, but my left sock's on fire. I can stay here.
I ordered a pencil and they sent it in a box that was about 1 inch by 42 feet. I think they heard us.